a puddle, capture tadpoles and bring them home and watch them mature. As I grew up, I just got more and more interested in poking around at the world around me. I think that's why I'm a microbiologist and a biologist to this day. You know, I started off poking squishy things in a pond, and now I just kind of poke smaller squishy things in the name of public health.
There's an amusing image of the route to success making the rounds on the internet. Perhaps you've seen it. It's often assumed that the route to success is a straight line, but for many it's a squiggly line of trying things out, dead ends, and detours. That's definitely been my own experience, so I'm quite intrigued by stories about others that don't necessarily follow straight lines. I'm fascinated by people that find careers they love from an unforeseen series of circumstances. One of those still embarking on an unexpected journey is Dr. Jennifer Gardy. Like myself, she's an alumna of both SFU and the Banff Center's Science Communication Program. She's an assistant professor at the School of Population and Public Health at the University of British Columbia. But you might also have seen her on television. This story is a window into her journey.
This is the nature of things.
We're constantly inundated with advice. Sugar makes children hyper. Brown eggs are healthier than white. We should drink 8 glasses of water a day. But are any of these true? I'm Dr. Jennifer Gardy, and I intend to find out.
Level check, level check, checking a level. This is exciting. It's cool to do radio.
I wanted to start by getting you to go way back and maybe talk to me about when you were a little kid. Do you have any first memories of what you wanted to be when you grew up?
When I was a little kid, I had a career plan set out that was completely ridiculous. My plan was to be a doctor in the morning, a dentist in the afternoon, and then a ballerina at night. I don't know why I thought that I was capable of having 3 careers in a single day, every single day. But what's kind of interesting is looking back on that now, I see that the desire to do science was there, something sort of medical, health related, but at the same time, the desire to perform, to communicate was there too, had very early origins. I don't think my career trajectory is so much a trajectory as a random walk through an interesting landscape. I had always been interested in science and science communication, going back to when I was a kid and having this weird desire to be a doctor in the morning and the ballerina in the evening. But as I went through school, I became more and more focused on the sciences and more interested in biology and then microbiology. I hate to admit it, but a formative influence in my career was seeing Outbreak with Dustin Hoffman.
The greatest medical crisis of all time. We can't stop it.
Terrible movie, but really got me interested in infectious diseases. And I think maybe also kind of planted a bit of the seed that science communication is a thing. You can illustrate science, through Hollywood.
Many people are dying and are going to continue to die unless we find this monkey.
So with the infectious disease track, the sort of Dustin Hoffman thing in mind, I went to UBC as an undergraduate, ended up doing cell biology and genetics as a degree with a concentration in some bacterial and viral pathogenesis. So I was following the canonical sort of science script. And on the side, I was working at the campus newspapers, and this happened unintentionally. It wasn't me saying, oh, I really want to do, science communication as a career one day. I better equip myself with communication skills. It was me reading one paper in particular, this sort of satire paper put out by the Science Undergraduate Society. It was very much in the style of The Onion. I was reading it in my first year in between classes, and I thought, this paper is hilarious. These people would be fun to hang out with. I should go figure out where their office is and go say hi. So at the beginning of second year, I screwed up the confidence to go and introduce myself and say, hey, I like your paper. Can I help too? And the paper guys were like, this is fantastic. There's a girl here. We've never seen one of these in our office. Of course you can write for the paper. So worked with them for the rest of my undergraduate career.
After her undergraduate degree at the University of British Columbia, Gardy headed to McGill University in Montreal, where she pursued a graduate diploma in biotechnology. But there, too, she explored her dual career interests, finding an opportunity to moonlight at a newspaper, the Montreal Gazette. She returned to Vancouver to do a PhD at Simon Fraser University in computational analysis of microbial genomes. There, too, she found an opportunity to freelance, writing science stories for SFU News. And then...
through the SFU community, got to know Mark Winston, who had been a professor in biology, but at the time was starting up the Center for Dialogue. And he's a great science communicator. So I sat down and said, you know, Mark, what do I need to know? Give me some advice. So we chatted and chatted and chatted. And he said, you know, one of the things that I'm involved with, it's going to be starting at some point, but it's going to be this great program at the Banff Center in science communications. When it happens for the first time, I'll let you know and you should come. So that ended up happening for the first time in 2006, and I just finished my PhD and transitioned to a postdoc, again doing computational biology and understanding infectious diseases over at UBC. As my graduation present, my parents paid for my tuition to go to this Banff workshop. And while I was there, I had gotten to thinking, you know, if writing about science is X amount of fun, then talking about it on television is probably 100x the amount of fun, if not even more orders of magnitude than that. So just harassed the faculty that was involved with television in any way, people like Jay Ingram and Henry Kowalski. I bugged them to the ends of the earth. I said, you know, what do you need to do to get on science television? How do you do it? Give me scripts to practice. Watch me read this. Okay, what can I do better? Bugged them and bugged them and bugged them and bugged them. But it worked. Not too long after that Banff workshop finished, maybe about a month or two, CBC Television was looking for hosts for a new 8-part series that they had planned, a kind of spin-off of The Nature of Things. So I had a little audition video of me reading Daily Planet scripts that Jay had given me to practice. Sent it in, they liked it, did a callback audition in person where you had to kind of come up with an experiment and demonstrate it on camera. Got the job. And the thing about science television is once you do it once and you do it well, people just keep inviting you back to do it more. There's right. No sort of Craigslist job posting for TV hosts. It's all word of mouth. Now I've got this strange career where science communications is one thing that I do. Maybe about 20% of my time is devoted to it. And the other 80% of my time, I'm basically Dustin Hoffman in Outbreak.
Your town is being quarantined.
minus the helicopter chases, minus the, you know, trying to beg a hemorrhaging monkey to save America. It's a little more routine than that. It's a little more sort of meetings and just pushing data around than I expected. But yeah, I managed to achieve the dream.
Which aspects of your career have been unexpected?
Which aspects of my career have been unexpected? All of them. Every aspect, I think. I always sort of followed an opportunistic path rather than this sort of straight arrow trajectory. It was very much a winding road. What landed in my lap that seemed interesting at the time? Oh, let's go in that direction for a little bit. That happened in science. You know, my original goal was Dustin Hoffman and Outbreak, but I wandered through, you know, computational biology, cell biology and genetics, microbial genomics, immunology, information visualization. And then, only once I'd taken that very strange path, did it all sort of coalesce into Dustin Hoffman and Outbreak, but built on this very odd, diverse set of experiences that kind of allowed me to, in my research practice, kind of create a new area of investigation and do something quite unique. And the same thing happened with science communication. It was always just following my nose from, hey, this campus paper looks like a fun place to work, to, oh, this magazine needs somebody to help them with their science. Sure, no problem. To, hey, look, CBC is looking for somebody. I should go in that direction. So I've never had had a plan. I've never known what's next. I've never said, okay, this is where I want to be in 1 year, in 5 years, or 10 years. It's just, you know, see what the day brings, see what your network brings you, what word of mouth and opportunities land in your lap. And follow the ones that look interesting. Don't follow your head necessarily, follow your heart. Your head will follow.
A big thank you to Dr. Jennifer Gardy for sharing her interesting story. And high fives to Tamsin Ogden and Clara Beckwith Jamieson, budding science communicators of the future. I'm Leslie Evans Ogden. Thanks for listening.
That was a documentary produced by CJSF Radio. We'd love to be doing more projects like that. And your contribution to FunDrive could help make that happen. You can go to CJSF. We can go to cjsf.ca/donate to make a donation in any amount, $35, $50, $70, or whatever you can afford. No amount is refused. No amount is too small. We'd love to see you supporting CJSF Radio, more programming like this, and helping us increase our ability to produce and provide programming like this. www.cjsf.ca/donate. We're going to pick up here with a track from Begonia. This is a new single out from her, and it is called Marigold. Begonia and Marigold. Coming up now is another interview presentation by Vivian Frudel. She hosted this program for quite a long time until she had to return to Germany. That's why I'm featuring some of her interviews. So you may have heard this before. This is an interview she did around the topic of inequality in sports.
I'm Vivian. We are CJSF 90.1 FM, and today's guest is a very special person. You want to introduce yourself?
Hello, everybody. My name is Nayo Reinkaka-Kunwe. I am a former professional women's basketball player and former member of the SFU Red Leafs team.
Yes. And as I already heard, you're in your last semester, right?
I am. I'm finishing up my last semester. I'm completing a Bachelor of Arts in Health Sciences, so it's very exciting times.
Yes, totally. And what are you planning to do with this kind of stuff?
So I'm going to be applying for my master's in public health here at SFU. And then I'd like to get into a career in healthcare and possibly policy making and changing the way that healthcare in Canada operates, because right now there's a lot of problems.
Totally, I get that. And why did you start playing basketball?
So I started playing basketball when I was 8 years old. I was pushed into the sport because I was the tallest person in my school.
Yeah.
And I'm very grateful of that because I fell in love very quickly with the game.
Nice. And what is your, or do you have like a, or had a dream in the past you succeed now, or do you still have a dream you want to fulfill in the future?
Well, my dream for basketball was always to represent Team Canada at an Olympic Games. And I achieved that 2 times. I played in the Olympics in Rio de Janeiro and Tokyo. And now I'm actually kind of formulating my new goal for life and career-wise, which I'm not sure what it is yet.
Nice. And how was that for you playing on the national team? Comparison to playing now at SFU?
Yeah, it was amazing. It was always, I think it's every athlete's biggest honor to be able to represent their country. So to be able to, you know, put on that Canadian jersey every time, it was just a very emotional experience. And one of my proudest and greatest moments is always representing Team Canada. And of course, playing for SFU too was always a proud moment because we were the only, you know, Canadian school in the NCAA, so we were always representing Canada whenever we went and played in the States, so I was also very proud.
Yeah, and you named the WNBA before. You also played in the WNBA, right?
Yes, so I played for 2 seasons with the New York Liberty in the WNBA. Great experience, very high level. And yeah, the Americans just play a different style of game, very competitive, very gritty and aggressive, and it was a lot of fun.
Yeah, nice. So you also said to me before we start the interview that you traveled a lot in Europe, right?
Mm-hmm.
So you also played basketball in Europe.
Yes. So I played 9 years professionally for teams throughout Europe, in Germany, Switzerland, France, and Russia.
Very nice. And you said you're a pretty famous woman here on the basketball team.
I wouldn't say famous. Maybe well known, just because of, I think, the places I've played.
Yeah, but it's still pretty impressive to have a national or ex-national team player here at CJSF.
Thank you.
And you, as a woman on the basketball team, do you think it's more difficult to be successful in the basketball scene as a woman in comparison to like men in basketball?
Yeah, I think the women's game is getting more and more attention, but it's still, I think, the focus is on the men, and I think it's getting better year by year, and as more you know, more attention is being paid to the women's game, more games are being played on TV, a lot more people are seeing, okay, this is an exciting style of basketball. But there still are a lot of inequalities between the men's and women's sides.
And where exactly do you see room for improvement when it comes to equality in basketball?
Specifically for basketball, I think the amount of games that are shown on TV, that needs a lot of improvement. Still, I think it's, I don't want to say the percentage, but the majority is clearly men's games that are being shown. And then the second large improvement that needs to be made is salary equality.
Yeah, it's getting better. I read an article that I think women who plays basketball or playing in the WNBA gets like paid when they're are going to be a mother and going to be in motherhood. So I think there is still room for improvement, especially as a woman. You get pregnant, you have to take breaks. Yeah, and that's how nature works. So I think there's still a lot of improvement to that.
Yeah, I think the WNBA is making big strides on that maternity leave and maternity pay. With a lot of the contracts in Europe, if you get pregnant, your contract will be cut. You won't get any salary. And there's minimal protection for basketball players and athletes, which is unfortunate, but the WNBA is making a lot of progress.
Yeah, but still, I think it's a difference when it comes to WNBA and the European league or leagues, especially in Germany, because basketball still have difficulties to be more like famous and this kind of stuff. So I think there's a lot of room for improvement. Mm-hmm. And did you ever face prejudice as a woman when you talked about yours? Board, or did you ever make like a bad experience with someone who had prejudice against you?
I wouldn't say it was an okay. Let me rephrase. I've had numerous men come up to me and say, "Oh, I'll beat you. I'm going to beat you one on one." Like, and they've known that I've played in the WNBA, that I've been in two Olympic Games, I've played professionally for 9 years, and they'll still come up to me and say, "Oh, I could beat you one on one."
Yeah.
And I think a lot of basketball players who are women experience that. Mm-hmm. And it just shows that a lot of people don't take our game seriously. So in terms of prejudice, that is what I've experienced. And usually, you know, we can shut that down pretty quickly by saying, I wouldn't even, like, I don't need to prove myself to you. So
yeah, you don't need to prove them because, you know, women are, like, it's the same as men. And that's why I don't get, like, the payments is still unjust, or there's still injustice when it comes to payments and this kind of stuff. So, yeah, still, as I already said, room for improvement.
Yes. Yes, lots of room for improvement. And the future of women's basketball, though, is exciting. There's a lot of exciting new players coming up, and a lot more attention being paid to the women's side of the game, especially in North America. So it's exciting.
You can also buy tickets for the SFU women team, basketball team, on the SFU website. I will link them or the website to buy tickets on our website, cdsf.ca. Before I came here to Canada, I was not like into basketball, but then I came here and I had lots of friends who played basketball, and I was like very excited to see like the games, and the vibe is very cool. So
amazing.
Yeah, just go there and watch them. They're pretty cool.
Yes.
And do you think, we talked about sports or women in sports, do you think women in sports are underestimated in general when it comes to sports?
I think so. I think sports is still such a male-dominated industry, and women often have to fight to prove themselves that they belong in that industry. So I think people do still underestimate us, but that's slowly changing as more and more girls are starting to get into sports. It's a slow change, but it's getting there.
Yeah. And do you have like any tips, or what can people do better when they have like prejudice and this kind of stuff? What can people do better to understand women in sports and this kind of stuff?
Mm-hmm. I would say come watch us play. Come to a game before you judge us. And also think if you had a daughter or a young sister who loved sports, would you want to treat the game that she loves with disrespect? Would you want to not support her? So think of that. If you ever had, you know, children who love sports, support them.
True,
support
very true. So go on the website and buy some tickets. Or if you're a student, I think the game is for free, right?
Yes, free student entry. We have our first home game December 3rd. It's a big cross-border rivalry with Western Washington. Mm. So it's going to be a good one.
Yes. And go buy tickets. I will definitely buy one. It's pretty cool.
Look forward to seeing you there.
Yes. And do you have any last words for us? Or advice or tips? Or maybe a tip for someone who wants to start playing basketball? Do you have any advice?
Yeah. Come out and watch your local sports teams. We need your support. And watching basketball or watching any sport actually is how you can improve. It's mm-hmm. how you can improve your IQ of the game. It's how you can see different moves that maybe you can incorporate into your game. So watching sports and supporting your local team is a great all-around idea for just supporting mm-hmm. the local team and improving your game.
Yes. Thank you so much for coming here. And yeah, we will definitely hear from you again. And you can rehear the show again on cjsf.ca. And you can also go on the link and buy some new tickets for the game on 3rd of December.
December 3rd at 5:30.
So yeah. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Vivian.
Yes, it's always a pleasure. And yeah, thank you so much. And see you around here on campus.
Yeah, we'll see you.
Thank you to Vivian for that interview. We're just about out of time here at Speak Up for this morning. It is fun drive time, and I'm going to ask you to think about what you listen to on CJSF. What are the shows you like? Why do you tune into this station? Why does it have value for you? And then think about maybe making a contribution to CJSF at our website, www.cjsf.ca. All right, here is Bird Note with a special Halloween edition. They're going to look at the vampire finch. Holy moly, who knew such a thing existed?
This is Bird Note. In the far-off Galapagos Islands, blood is dripping. There are vampires at work. But they don't wait for cover of darkness to take wing. They menace their victims in broad daylight, stabbing holes in their flesh, then devouring the blood. These vampires aren't bats or castaway Transylvanian aristocrats. They're vampire ground finches. And they look innocent enough. Vampire ground finches sometimes eat seeds, but during the dry season, seeds can be scarce, and their survival options are few. Fly to another island, starve, or see what else nature offers. On offer are large seabirds like boobies. Fluttering onto a booby's back, the finch jabs its sharp beak in among the feathers until blood flows. Again and again, the finch dips its beak in the blood, making a meal of it. Why boobies tolerate the bloodletting isn't known. They may be too preoccupied with nesting. Or it may be there are so many finches that boobies have no alternative but to adapt to a part-time role as blood donors. Happy Halloween. From Bird Note, I'm Michael Stein.
Well, that sounded kind of Halloween gruesome, didn't it? I love Bird Note, and I'm pleased that we are able to bring it to you most days. It airs as part of a number of different programs here on CJSF. It's a great little segment with great information about birds. I had no idea about the vampire finch. It sounds so crazy, I'm almost inclined not to believe it, but I guess it's true. Coming up in a couple of minutes is Democracy Now! And I think this is one of our most popular programs that we bring here. It is produced by Amy Goodman and her team in New York City every morning. And we bring it to you every weekday morning. And we bring it to you fresh, right off the internet, right off there. They send it to us, and we get it to you and put it on at 11 o'clock. So you can listen to it every day. And when things are happening in the world, as they are now in the Middle East, they have, I think, a unique perspective, very different than what you're going to find through most of the mainstream media outlets. And they have the opportunity, the ability to get some really amazing guests in. They have the kind of access that we could only dream of here at CJSF with our own produced programs. So we're really happy to bring that program to you every week, every day, every weekday. And I think it's a special thing that we're able to do. If that's something you value, if you're a regular listener of Democracy Now!, if you're just tuning in now, perhaps to get ready to watch or listen to the show here on CJSF, I'd like you to think about making a contribution to CJSF. It costs a lot of money to keep the radio station going and keep this facility and all the infrastructure that it takes to run it and the staff and people. So we can put programs like Democracy Now! On the air. So we can put programs like Speak Up on the air and Canada Land and all the great music programs we have. I hope you will consider making a contribution. Go to www.cgsf.ca/donate and make a contribution to Fundive 2023. Thank you.